It is time for our weekly State Capitol Report, when we get up to date on the top stories in state politics each week and find out what's on tap in the days to come. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, February the 13th. First, our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, joins us with a roundup of the state capitol news. We will focus in on the latest developments in the race to unseat Governor Walker in a recall election with a state political scientist coming up after 7:30. If you have a question about the latest news involving state government, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome in our guest. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So we had a lot of news involving the recall. We will be talking more about it after 7:30, but we have a new candidate running as a Democrat in the probable recall against Scott Walker. Yes?
Yes. Alma Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, who had hinted in recent weeks that she might be interested in a race, last week formally declared that she was going to be running for governor if there's a recall election.
Sorry about that. I think when we look at things like executive experience, we've got right now a former county executive of a big county in this state in the governor's office, and it's not working out so well for us. So when people say we need a fresh start, I appreciate that, and I think I can bring that to this race.
So Vinehout there referencing the executive experience of the other Democratic candidate in the race, Kathleen Falk, who's a former Dane County executive, and saying that's not necessarily a good thing if you look at the fact that we have an executive in the office right now.
So there was also big news regarding the other Kathleen running. Kathleen Falk was there was some eyebrows raised when it was revealed that she would veto a budget that did not repeal the collective bargaining restrictions.
Yes. And I mean, to hear Kathleen Falk describe it, this is something she's been saying for a while, but her endorsement by WEAC, the state's largest teachers union, coupled with that, this is a pretty strong indication that, you know, that's one of the reasons they were looking her way. Kathleen Falk was asked about, you know, her pledge to veto any budget that did not include collective bargaining at the press conference where she was endorsed by WEAC.
Yes, I have said that I will veto a budget bill if it does not have collective bargaining. I have been saying that regularly and often.
And Falk says that when she talks to people, they ask, how do we, you know, undo the policies of the governor? She says he took away collective bargaining through the budget repair bill. The way you get it back is through the budget, which is correct. I mean, if you were going to do something like that, it would be through the budget. But that is a hard line stand she's taken there. There's not a lot of wiggle room. And given the possibility that you could have divided government next year, and a possibility, Assembly Republicans have said there's no way that they would include collective bargaining in a budget they pass. So, you know, you could see that becoming a protracted battle potentially, but that's a long way down the road.
Why did WEAC endorse Kathleen Falk so early?
They say it's a shortened campaign, and so you have to do everything faster. But there, you look at other candidates who are considering getting in the race. One of the big names out there is Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, and he hasn't gotten in yet. He has a Democratic primary for mayor coming up here soon, which could be a factor in him not jumping to the race. We don't know what the decision-making is there, but Tom Barrett has not been as firm as Kathleen Falk has on this issue. Every Democratic candidate has said, we want to restore collective bargaining rights. But Kathleen Falk is the only one who's come out and said, you know, it was such a firm promise that I'll veto a budget that doesn't have it.
There's been some. What has the reaction been to that WEAC endorsement?
Well, if you look at other Democratic candidates, they basically said we want to accomplish the same goal. We just don't want to issue ultimatums or, you know, deal in brinkmanship. The Republican Party, a little more forceful. They said it smacks of pay to play. That's kind of the range of reactions there.
Yeah. So Tom Barrett is, all eyes are on him. Will he enter? Will he not enter? But is it expected there will be more Democratic challengers?
I, I think it's expected at this point, and you know what Tom Barrett decides probably would go a long way toward deciding, you know, who else might jump in the race. If he gets in, and then you have Tom Barrett and Kathleen Falk, people who have run in statewide races before, and then you have Kathleen Vinehout in there, someone, you know, a newcomer, but, you know, sounds willing to wage a pretty aggressive campaign. That could change things if Tom Barrett gets in there. If not, then who knows? You know, you could have... Who knows who to enter if he doesn't get in?
Well, on Friday, Governor Walker was speaking before that CPAC convention, and he was talking about the recall in Wisconsin.
Yeah, he spoke at a couple conservative events, national events last week, one in Florida, hosted by the James Madison Institute, and then the CPAC, Conservative Political Action Committee, where in a presidential year when you have you know, Republican presidential candidates going there to speak, Scott Walker was the keynote speaker that night, and he talked about how, you know, he felt that if they prevailed in the recall election in Wisconsin, it would show that if you make tough choices, that people will reward you. But then he presented the alternate scenario.
And Lord help us if we fail. Lord help us if we fail. I believe fundamentally, having looked at this more closely over time, if we fail... And I'm not planning on it, but if we were to fail, I think this sets aside any courageous act in American politics for at least a decade, if not a generation. That is why we must not fail.
It's similar to speeches he's given at other conservative events, national events, you know, going back to last summer. The Lord help us was something, you know, he may have said that in some of these speeches as well, but it's something, you know, you haven't heard in, say, his State of the State address.
And as we're talking about Governor Walker, it was revealed last week that he did not necessarily set up the meeting with the John Doe investigators. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and we had mentioned last week that he was going to have a voluntary meeting with prosecutors in the John Doe investigation in Milwaukee County. All we knew is what he put out in a statement. He did tell reporters, though, that you know, this was a meeting that investigators wanted to have, that they wanted to talk to him. That's what we know now. We don't know whether they met yet. He hasn't taken questions on that since last Monday.
Yeah, and there was there were some more developments regarding the petitions and the Government Accountability Board and that appeals court ruling about what the GAB was supposed to do with those petitions.
Yeah, that was something we didn't know last week either. We knew that there was an appeals court that said that Judge Mac Davis's ruling in Waukesha County should be vacated because he had improperly excluded the recall committee's Democrats from the lawsuit. We now know that the Government Accountability Board is proceeding as though Judge Davis's ruling is still in effect, because procedurally it is. And, you know, this is something that maybe, well, I won't say maybe, this is something that is a non-lawyer. You kind of, even as you read the explanation from the appeals court, didn't quite sink in. But it takes time for that appeals court ruling to set in. And so in the meantime, the Government Accountability Board is operating as though the ruling's in effect. And so what that means is they still have to search more aggressively for duplicate and fictitious names in these recall petitions. It's a change from the way that they've done things in the past. What they did say, though, last week is that they're considering different ways of doing that. And so instead of looking at handwriting, you know, recognition software, optical scan recognition, which is a new process for them, you know, untested, could be a lengthy process, could be buggy. They said they're now looking at statistical sampling, where they take a certain sample of the recall petitions, look at the instances of duplicate names across that sample, and then apply it to the total number of signatures, and use that to determine whether or not there were too many duplicate signatures.
Did the GAB tell the group called Verify the Recall that it didn't want its help?
The GAB said that under state law, something like the Tea Party, a group like the Tea Party, can't get involved and basically file formal challenges to recall petitions. And that's what the Tea Party groups wanted to do, the Verify the Recall folks. So they wanted to basically have a seat at the table where they could use, you know, names, signature verification efforts from their volunteers to say, you should strike these signatures, Government Accountability Board. And the board, while they didn't exactly issue a formal ruling, they stood by their staff's decision that state law doesn't let us do that. That, you know, the people who are at the table are the campaign committee, in this case, the Walker campaign committee, the campaign committee of Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, and the campaigns of four Republican state senators who face recalls.
And then I thought I saw that in terms of verifying signatures, State Senator Scott Fitzgerald said that he would be challenging more than 3,000 signatures on the petitions against him, which would bring him below the threshold of recall should they all be thrown out. But the other three candidates running for or the other three candidates that are being recalled were unable to come up with that many?
They're challenging signatures. They're challenging thousands of signatures for all the recall campaign committees. And for each one of them, they use this really sort of untested legal argument that because these senators are now representing the new districts under the new redistricting maps, there are a bunch of people who sign these recall petitions who live in the old districts but don't live in the new districts, and so you have to toss their names out. That argument, I mean, you know that the Government Accountability Board, at least on its initial review, is going to reject that argument. So that's not going to fly. But if you dive down into Scott Fitzgerald's challenge deeper, he challenges a bunch of names based on other criteria as well, you know, and so if the Government Accountability Board were to accept every one of his challenges, and another one of his challenges, by the way, is that signatures circulated or petitions circulated on the first day, you can't verify that those actually happened before they filed the paperwork for these recall petitions. You know, we don't know if the Government Accountability Board is going to accept that argument. But if they accept everything that he put forward, his would be the only recall that was thwarted, basically. But again, he's talking about challenging stuff like apartment numbers missing for circulators, and we don't know if the Government Accountability Board is going to say that's a reason to toss a signature or a petition.
Okay, well, we're going to talk more about the latest in the recall news with a state political scientist coming up after 7:30 as our state capitol report continues. In just a moment, we'll get some other news from Sean about redistricting in Wisconsin and some other issues, and we'll welcome your input too if you have questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will also talk about this news that Wisconsin is facing another big budget deficit, and Wisconsin is also going to use a share of a national mortgage settlement on the budget. So we'll talk more about that coming up after this weather break. Increasing clouds with light snow in southern Wisconsin and a chance in the central part of the state today. Less than 2 inches expected by the time it's over tonight. Highs today will be in the upper 20s in the west to the mid-30s in the far north and east. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government reporter, during this, our state capitol report. And Sean, I saw last week that Wisconsin faces another budget deficit of $143 million. What's this all about?
It's based on the new revenue projections, the new general fund statement, is called by the Nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau. And from time to time, they look at trends in the national economy, projections of economic growth in Wisconsin compared to how much tax revenue, you know, we have coming in now and what the bills are. And they said that instead of having a budget surplus, as, you know, was talked about last year, at the end of this 2-year budget cycle, Wisconsin would be $143 million in the red. And a big part of the reason for that is just income tax collections have dropped off, particularly income tax collections have dropped off projections. But they're down $140 million compared to the last time the Fiscal Bureau did this last year.
Presumably because of unemployment.
And
fewer people working and paying income taxes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just income taxes. Yeah. The sales taxes are down. People are buying less.
Oh, yeah.
Corporate income taxes are down. Tobacco taxes are down, too. So places the state gets money, it's not coming in as the state expected it
to. So do we need a budget repair bill to fix this?
The governor did not. He had a news conference last week on another topic. He didn't take questions on that topic, though, in particularly. It sounds like the Department of Administration is going to try to deal with this shortfall without a budget repair bill. And what that will mean, it could take some time for them to they could have to refinance some debt. The thing that the Walker administration is pointing to is that if you look at the end of this fiscal year, the state has an $11 million balance at the end of this fiscal year, the one that ends on June 30th. But the only way that the state has that surplus is that it's taking $26 million from the mortgage settlement that was announced last week and dumping it right into the general fund.
Well, what's the deal with that? Is that this mortgage settlement is supposed to, I thought, help people who are facing foreclosure and that sort of thing?
Yeah, the state got $140 million, was its share of this $25 billion settlement nationwide. Most of the money is going to go to programs like that, but this section was at the state's discretion, particularly the Attorney General's discretion. And Governor Walker defended the move at his press conference last week.
Because just like communities and individuals have been affected, the foreclosure crisis has had an impact on the state of Wisconsin in terms of unemployment, in terms of revenues collected, in terms of services provided.
Which is all true, but this is a governor who's been very critical of past administrations for using one-time money to balance the budget. And while this may be one-time money that's related to the budget shortfall here, it is one-time money. And this budget, through the end of this fiscal year, doesn't balance without that money. So you can argue over whether that's a break from the past for him. But given how much he's criticized past administrations for that, there's an argument to be made.
Well, Sean, we spent our first hour, or much of our first hour this morning, talking about this flap over redistricting and the revelations last week that apparently some Republican state lawmakers had signed agreements of secrecy and they had talking points and a lawsuit was filed over this.
Yeah, there was so much that was revealed last week. You just kind of have to tick through what we learned last week. First, we know this is all revealed through the discovery process in a lawsuit over the redistricting maps. And a federal judicial panel has granted attorneys challenging the maps, access to these documents. And so what they found is that documents showed that nearly all Republican legislators signed secrecy agreements before they were allowed to view the maps. It kept them from talking about the maps in public. There was a talking points memo that was in all these documents that instructed members to, quote, public comments on this map may be different from what you hear in this room, then what you hear in this room, ignore the public comments. There was a lot of talk when these maps were discussed publicly that it was, just to have equal representation and address minority voter concerns. But at the same time, privately, Republican representatives were shown a breakdown of how their districts performed politically. And we also learned from the Journal Sentinel's reporting that two Republican aides continue to work at a private law firm where all these secrecy agreements were signed in the first place.
Well, that sounds unusual.
It is unusual. I mean, all that is unusual. It's not unusual to have a level of privacy in the legislature. I mean, Republicans and Democrats routinely meet in private, closed caucuses where they discuss this stuff. But this is a level beyond that where they're basically carrying out the business of a legislature across the street at Michael Best and Friedrich. And so you had group Voces de la Frontera file complaints that they've violated the open meetings law in Wisconsin, that they had kind of a rolling quorum over it by doing this under the shield of attorney-client privilege. And attorney Peter Earl said that they wanted to ultimately invalidate the maps through this.
In the view of Voces de la Frontera, this was an intentional and malicious attempt to subvert the transparency that is required in good governance.
So the sort of shades of the budget repair lawsuit from last year, where there was an open meetings lawsuit violation, if this were, you know, if Attorney Earle were to get the Dane County District Attorney to go along with his complaint and a Dane County Circuit Judge to go along with his complaint, it would eventually go to the state Supreme Court, where the attorney who signed all these secrecy agreements is also Justice Michael Gableman's attorney. So it sets up a situation of what would happen there. Would the justice recuse himself? Attorney Earle says he would ask him to, but you know, Justice Gableman has not done that in other cases where this attorney's been involved.
All right. Well, just another minute or two before Sure. our news break. What's on tap this week? I see that that mining bill might be released today.
The mining bill, yeah, is going to be released soon. There could be a public hearing possibly as early as Friday.
And this is the Senate version.
The Senate version of the mining bill, right. The Assembly's already passed their version, but people are really waiting on the Senate version because that seems to be where the difficulty in getting this thing passed is. They have to get, you know, it's just tougher to cobble together votes over there for Republicans with a slim majority. And there's some Republican members who are worried about, you know, taking away things like the contested case hearing for mining. So, you know, we'll see what's in that bill possibly this week.
And maybe a public hearing on Friday on that?
Yeah, it looked like maybe a public hearing.
All right. And President Obama visits Milwaukee this week. Do we know what he's up to?
He's talking about Master Lock, the company that highlighted in his State of the Union address. So, you know, that's a campaign stop for the president in this swing state.
Now, anything else this week that you're going to be following?
The Assembly and Senate are in this week. The Joint Finance Committee is going to hear from the Department of Administration on these budget lapses that that DOA proposed a while back. You know, given the new budget numbers, I think it's probably all but certain that those are going to go through as planned. And then you got a potential Friday court case involving, you know, recall timelines.
All right. So never a dull moment, Sean. All right. We'll talk to you again next week. All Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter. This is the State Capitol Report.